But I want to talk to you basically about the development and the acceptability of an HIV prevention intervention that we have used in faith-based communities. And again, we have done this intervention primarily with African-American women, but we have looked at age ranges from 18 to 34 and also from 35 to 60. And I want to start just by thanking my co-authors and my team, my lead health educator who is sitting here in the audience, Nakia Braxton, the developer of our intervention and the PI of the grant, Dr. Gina Wingood, and my other team members, Deja Ayer and Anita Connor. I have no relationships to disclose. And again, we're going to talk about HIV prevention in the Black churches. And in looking at this, it was really exciting to work on both of these projects because we were able to not only just look at HIV testing and screening, but we were able to look at HIV education and not just abstinence education, but sex education in the church. Again, the study is with, it's actually two separate studies, one funded by CDC, one funded by NIH. The first called P4 for women with ages 18 to 34, and the other, Ladies First, the first standing for faith, Ladies Finding Faith-Inspired Real Solutions Together for the ages 35 to 60. And with both of them, we operated around a theme, Proverbs, of seeking wisdom and knowledge and getting an understanding. Our study goals basically was to take an evidence-based intervention that had already been proven effective and to take that and to create a faith-based intervention from it. And then be able to implement it within churches' existing ministries, like their women's ministries, their health ministries, and so forth, and then to look at the church's ability not only to implement that intervention, but also to sustain the intervention. There's a particular model that we use to actually take the intervention that we use, which was SISTA, an intervention originally designed for African-American women 18 to 34. And it's called the adapted model. I'm going to just kind of briefly go over what that model entails, one being assessment, basically looking at it, at an intervention and picking your risk population for us African-American females, then deciding again, which EBI you're going to use, and for us it was the SISTA EBI, and then being able to do what's called a theater test, where we went into the churches and actually implemented that particular intervention and let them decide what components needed to be changed or adopted or adapted, and then producing that draft from their input and then using them as topical experts again, to create an intervention that they then could own. We then piloted the intervention, made adjustments. That's the integration phase. And then we trained the staff to implement the intervention and then, again, evaluated its efficacy. One of the things that we did prior to is to look at, especially in choosing, you know, a recruitment site and looking at that church and looking at their readiness, is to look at, again, their capacity to become involved in a research project, looking at what they've done in the past as far as HIV prevention, looking at their willingness to collaborate with us as a scientific institution, describing the research process to them, because a lot of churches are unfamiliar with the research process. Looking at that as well as the funding process. And also, if because, again, most churches don't have an IRB, getting them to agree to be governed by our IRB and just kind of looking at the whole process and really getting their buy-in and the need for HIV prevention. What we did at that point was create what we call a church advisory board. And the members of our church advisory board were usually one of the main members of the church's executive boards, because you won't always be able to, even though you engage and get the support of the pastor, he may not be, or she may not be the main person that will be the one that will be giving you feedback. So usually it was a member that was directly under the pastor. Also, we engaged usually all of a member from ministries that would be directly affected by the population we were trying to serve, such as the women's ministry, the health ministry, the singles ministry, and the college ministry. This is just a picture of our church advisory board, which again includes all of our research team, as well as all of the members of the church advisory board. Now, some of the things to consider as you're looking at the function that the church advisory board serves, they were very key in adapting the sister intervention, again, in creating the faith-based intervention that came from it. They did everything from, again, reviewing the assessment surveys that we had, looking at our HIV testing procedures, recruiting the participants, being trained to disseminate the intervention themselves, and then we also talked about just disseminating and sustaining the intervention after the research portion was over. So again, one of the main purposes of adapting the intervention was to develop an intervention and a plan to go about systemically adapting it, including all of the scriptural references, including the topics that they felt were most important to their congregation, while still being able to maintain the core elements of the intervention, the original intervention. Some of the issues that came up or that we had to consider as we are engaging this faith-based institution was looking at abstinence versus risk reduction. And as one of my colleagues said earlier, one of the messages that we gave to them and made sure that they were on board with us with was that we're not just trying to provide something to save the person spiritually, but we would like to be able to provide something to save their lives. And most of the ministers would agree and concur that everybody in the church was not practicing abstinence, that we had a large population of people who were single and sexually active. So therefore, that risk reduction was a very important component to include in an HIV education class. So of course, the topic of condoms would come up. And again, there are churches who would be no condoms. We were lucky to find, again, we are in Atlanta, Georgia, so we were lucky to find a church that really did say, we won't actively tell you to just pass out condoms to anybody and everybody, but if a woman comes and asks you for one because she is sexually active, please give her one. So also, it was very important for us to offer HIV testing to the congregation and also to set up a system of referrals. If we had women that had other issues, that there were places within that congregation that we would be able to refer them back to. Also, whether they wanted the intervention to occur in their church or for privacy, did they have an outside facility or were they comfortable with their church members going somewhere else? And also, were the facilitators to be part of their congregation or were they comfortable contracting with other facilitators, so again, to protect the privacy of their congregation? Just to show you very quickly a few of the sample things that we did to adapt the intervention. One was just like she said, was to promote the concept of the value of your body. Your body is a temple. That was one of the key spiritual components that we added. Also, in using role models, we used models that were actually suggested to us by members of their congregation. And also, again, to just kind of accentuate the text on monogamy and abstinence, because again, that is the church's main message. Abstinence is the first thing, but if you're not doing this, then these are your other recourses. Okay. This is just a little bit, again, because these were two different studies with two different age ranges, Just to give you a little bit of the differences and similarities of the study, they both used a faith-based adaptation of the sister intervention. With the younger women, with P4 for women, sister was the control group, so we were allowed to do both the secular version and the faith-based version. Again, with the church understanding what a control group meant. With the ladies first intervention, the older women, we used the adapted intervention and a general health control where they did general health and nutrition and Zumba. Both had the exact same criteria as far as the ladies had to be African-American single, not living with their main partner, attending the church but not necessarily members because, again, the church also, we opened it up to the community of that church. Our main churches, we used two main churches as our recruitment site, one being a mega church with about 25,000 members and one being a smaller church but still had about 7,000 members. Again, where I am. And both interventions were three consecutive sessions once a week, and we followed the women either 3 to 6 months or 6 to 12 months. So, yes. So I want to talk a little bit about recruitment, and it's going to be very brief, but what I want to show in this particular slide is that it really didn't matter. We used technology. We used every form of avenue that the church had, pulpit announcements, digital press, video announcements, on-site, everything. The thing in both studies that was tremendously most effective was what went across that pulpit. That was the power. P4 for Women is actually, our recruitment has ended. We are still recruiting in our ladies' first intervention. And again, this just kind of shows you young versus old. In P4 for Women, we screened about 517 people, and out of that, 161 were eligible. And for Ladies First, we've so far screened 589 women, and out of those, 473 were eligible. And I want to make one caveat about this. One of the other things with P4 for Women, what we did, because again, this was the first study we did within the faith-based institution, we used women who were sexually active only. In Ladies First, with the older women, what we end up doing is you did not have to just be sexually active. But we wanted to look at all of your messages, whether you were sexually active, whether you were abstinent, or whether you were 100% condom user. For the younger study, basically the main two reasons why you were ineligible was either you weren't having sex or you were 100% condom user. For the older study, you were either married or living with your partner or it was your age. And looking at how effective the classes were and how we were able to include them, how they stayed in the three sessions, there were approximately 134 women, pretty much evenly split for the P4 for Women group. And again, same for the eligibility for the Ladies First group. And in looking at their attendance, basically, for the control group, still attendance for the sessions went from 100% to 91 to 84, with group attendance for the faith-based one being 100, 98, and 89. And again, for the older group, the same thing. We had excellent attendance to all sessions. And I want to just kind of go over what some of the ladies commented about the class. For the younger group, the women said the classes were very informative. There was so much information I did not know. I loved the openness and honesty of everyone in the class. I didn't feel like they were preaching. I learned that I can be a Christian as well as still be myself. I really liked the sessions and enjoyed every moment. The facilitators had a lot of energy and was excited to be there, which encouraged me to fully participate. And then just some of the comments for the older women. Same thing, I really enjoyed getting the information that will help me to control my actions in the best way that honors God. I also really liked all of the group participation during the sessions. I learned a lot of new things, especially how to put on a condom and the characteristics of a good condom. Something else that I learned that was new to me was the rates of HIV in Atlanta and the ways you can become infected. Okay. So I'm just going to briefly, real quickly, go over the results. Again, this is only from the younger study because we're still implementing with the older one. The women's were in the adapted sister group were 2.4 times as likely to report being abstinent for more than 30 days, 3.6 times likely as likely to report using condoms consistently during the past 90 days, and 2.3 times as likely to report using condoms at last sex act. And also, just some of the religious factors that ended up being significant, the women were more likely to confide in a religious leader at the church. They were more likely to report an increase in religious participation. They were more likely to be able to discuss using condoms with their sex partners, and they had greater confidence in their ability to use condoms. Okay. So again, next step is we're now taking those interventions. We're training the church's members, and we are actually giving them, and it's about a $1,500 intervention that we're giving to the churches, training their congregation to then implement once we leave. Thank you.
We have about 10 minutes for questions, so if you have a question, just wave your hand. I know somebody got questions there. Are you scared of me? Because what I said before about the obedience is better than sacrifice. But if you have a question, feel free. We can take those right now for any of our panelists. Right here, and then it'll be you next. Yes, ma'am.
I have several questions, but I will start with, I have a question for Mr. Davian about the Fit Fabulous. What was the content of the monthly meetings, and did everybody, like, you have this large collaboration or coalition of folks, everybody isn't necessarily in
Our program is focused on diabetes, right? But what we do at the faith-based meeting is that we also invite other organizations that are interested in collaborating with our network of churches, because they already know that many of our, we sort of have built the infrastructure in the churches, so we have been doing some partnerships with groups that might do cancer work or not so much HIV work from my experience. But then, and then the other thing is that at the monthly meeting, the people that attend are the coordinators of each of those churches. So not necessarily participants from Find Fit and Fabulous, but the people coordinating the Find Fit and Fabulous initiative.
So it's not a one-on-one meeting, it's like everybody comes.
Yeah, they come together, all the 47 churches, or the representatives of the 47 churches. And we've been meeting the last Monday of every month for the last 12 years. So in the same place. Everyone knows about that.
The gentleman in the back.
I actually have a couple. So I found the Carl Henry work, so I'm going to chew anything. For the I recently had a friend who committed suicide, actually, and he was a sex positive and African American, and very much felt alienated from the church. And part of what his friend talked about driving him to that point was the fact that he still, like, didn't belong or he didn't feel supported by the church. So I'm wondering if the conversation is that taking place in the church, and I know this is an exciting kind of specific intervention that you guys also talk about, or ladies all talk about, around the celebration of same gender loving individuals, or the embracing of, or even the tolerance of the individuals, and what those conversations look like.
Sure. I appreciate you bringing the topic. There are some churches which some people use the term inclusive, where it is affirming LGBT and same gender loving. And so, you know, you have this spectrum. For those who are affirming, that's a safe place to be. You're not put in a position where you feel like you have to choose who you are or your religious faith. For churches that are not at the place of affirming it, then we talk to them even about the inappropriate comments that get made. Oftentimes when people don't know what to say, they do like these jokes from the pulpit or make these comments that are very, so we even would say silence is better than offensive. And so, you know, if it's not something you can affirm or that you're going to say that this is a good thing, to not marginalize people in that way. We also have talked about the issue, the hypocrisy in some ways, of if what's really motivating the conversation is scripture, then how come there isn't more time spent talking about pedophiles or talking about people who are unfaithful to their partners? And so the beautiful thing is to see the conversation happen amongst ministers. I think because as a health professional coming in, then people feel like, well, of course you're going to say that. That's your thing, because you're a health professional. But what I have seen it to be the most productive is when you have ministers who have different thoughts about it, engaging each other. But I would say the best conclusion is to find a community that is inclusive, and that if people aren't affirmative, to at least get them to the point where they're not saying things that are going to make people get to that point of feeling condemned.
One other thing, we experienced the same thing in our churches in Kansas City, and as a matter of fact, one of our lead pastors had a brother who died of AIDS. And the interesting thing is his brother was gay and grew up in the church, and everyone was fine with that, but the minute he got AIDS, then everyone began to shun him. And so what we did to add to our toolkit was a video, and it was really his story about HIV and stigma in the Black church. And it's been one of our most powerful tools to talk about this issue. It's about a 10-12 minute video that most of the churches show actually during the church services, that it never leaves a dry eye in the house. But beyond that, it gets people talking about how can we start breaking down these walls. You know, HIV has its own stigma, but then when you start layering it with all of the gender issues and those kinds of things, it just becomes, I mean, just a huge separating barrier in our communities. And so we found this video to be very helpful. And if you email me or whatever, I can send you a
video. Were there any other questions? Young lady right here.
Because people are used to us being pathologized, there was the idea of like, are people making up these numbers to make us look bad? And so to establish like, these are actually the numbers, and that there's power in people finding out, people knowing. And in terms of the screening, this isn't directly related to your question, but it's something I meant to say earlier that was interesting to me. When we talk about it's powerful for ministers to get screened, one of the ministers was sharing how it's important to have ministers not share their results. And I thought that was very significant because, you know, some of them come out after and they're like, hallelujah, I'm negative, right? And so they were saying, one, it sets up a precedent where other people feel like I have to share my results. And then also, you know, the religious point they made was, so is God not good if you were, let's say you were positive, that, you know, that God is so good. Right.
One of the things that we did in having conversations is really bringing home the fact that after they see these numbers and see, you know, this, how disproportionately affected we are, is really bringing home the message of you know, yes, you want all of your congregation members to strive for certain things, but do you want the other 50-70% of them to die while striving? So that it's just as important to save those and save lives as it is to bring them to salvation.
One last little comment. One of the things that we do on our quarterly booster meeting is have a large portion of that meeting set aside where pastors can argue, debate, go at, because it's really a safe forum. But I mean, some of these issues, they've been ingrained to believe, you know what I mean? We as a community have been ingrained to believe. And so it's a really safe forum for them not only to talk about the project, but to talk about their beliefs. And what we've seen over the last 7 years of doing this project are some of our pastors that were the most hard-nosed, traditional pastors have moved from, I will not talk about condoms, I don't believe, you know, anything related to homosexuality, blah, 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 homophobia, are all the way on the other end of the scale now. And they are some of our biggest proponents for the project to go out and bring in their peer pastors to the project. So the one thing that we say is we try to meet churches where they are. We don't want to alienate churches because of their religious beliefs. Because that's disrespectful on our behalf. So just giving them a forum to talk about these really hard and difficult issues and letting them feel safe about it has really been critical.
Well, this is the formal end of this program. We thank everyone for coming out. As you know, within the next couple of weeks, the call for abstracts will be going out. I hope some of you will submit. And on behalf of the Black Caucus of Health Workers, thank you for coming out. I'm sure our speakers, who've done a great job, let's give them a hand.